Monday, February the 10th, found me still sick. Obviously, I couldn't get up and do the three big things of on the docket for the afternoon and still be sure of being well Tuesday afternoon. And Tuesday is a must, because nothing short of a dead body would suffice to get me out of the diplomatic reception without hurting feelings. So I battened down the hatches by asking Linda, Lucy, and Warry Lynn to fill in on the really delightful afternoon schedule, which I hated so much to miss. First, at 3:30, Peter Benchley, the author of Jonathan Visits the White House, was supposed to present to me a copy of his book, and he was going to be accompanied by a real live little Jonathan, who was the son of the assistant to the president of the publishing company, McGraw-Hill, and there were going to be 30 children along, ranging from about 5 to 9 year olds. One of Bessie's children was coming, two of Diana's, and Angie Duke had supplied us with a nice little list of children from the diplomatic corps of suitable ages. My favorite, Rafaela Sepala, one little Sevilla Sacasa, that ought not to be hard to come by, the proper age when there are 9 in the family, at least 2 from the African nations. Later on, when Linda and Warry Lynn told me about the occasion, it just sounded delightful, and I almost rolled in the floor laughing about it, especially when I saw the darling pictures of the children. In standing in line to receive them, one little boy tugged at Linda's skirt and says, "I'm your cousin." Recognizing Diana's son, she said, "Hello, Sasha." He said, "I'm not Sasha now. I'm Alexander." All the little children were dressed up so delightfully, and several of them had on their native costumes. Rafaela Sepala's was adorable. They filed into the East Room after they had finished their special children's tour of the White House and after the presentation of the book had taken place to Linda Bird and Lucy Baines. And when they got into the East Room, there were already congregated there the youngsters for the second event of the afternoon. That was an audience of about 200 local high school students who had been invited to come and see the National Ballet Company put on Swan Lake and Something from Coppelia. The stage was set, the ballet was about to begin, all the chairs nearly were full, and in streamed the 30 little children from 5 to 9. As many as could found chairs, and then Linda Bird sat down on the floor and plopped Sasha or Alexander down in her lap, and Lucy, who somehow or another had a chair, took a little girl onto her lap, and the performance got underway. Linda Bird must have had a delightful time with Sasha. Among the incidents were, she said, "Alexander, I'm so glad to see you." And he said, "Is that all you have to tell me after I haven't seen you in 3 years?" One of the cutest pictures was Linda Bird and little Jonathan, who had bought his first pair of long pants for the occasion, and I think actually they were still about 4 inches too long, and he didn't look the least bit used to them, which didn't keep the two of them from looking utterly at home with each other, and really just delightful standing at the foot of the steps where there have been so many of those pictures taken visiting chiefs of state. The National Ballet did a very creditable job, though Linda Bird says she's seen better, on what was a creaky makeshift sort of a stage. But Swan Lake is bound to be beautiful. Linda Bird, being nearsighted, just has a hard time really telling what's going on that far away. And she was laughing when it was time to be crying when the swan was dying, at least according to Warry Lynn, who kept on giving me a delightful running account of the afternoon's activities. The members of the ballet company range all the way from Bulgaria and Yugoslavia, and from California to New York, and 4 of them were from Texas. Who says we don't have culture in Texas? Especially when this entire troupe only numbered about 28. That was a very attractive program of the National Ballet, and I hope all the little children went home feeling good about it. After they'd had their cookies and punch, Linda, Lucy, and Warry Lynn then came upstairs for leaving their guests down in the dining room for the third event of the day. This took place in a yellow room, and it was what I would most especially have liked to be present at, the presentation of the Margot Jones Awards. They would go to 3 individuals who carry on the tradition and spirit of the late Texas producer Margot Jones in encouraging new plays and new playwrights. And the people who got them were Mrs. Judith Marischal, who has given many first chances to young dramatists in off-Broadway plays in New York, and a Canadian who had been born in Texas, an old lady, Mrs. Roy McGregor Watt, known as the patron saint of playwrights in Canada. And then the last award went to Professor George Savage of the University of California in Los Angeles. On the judging committee were such playwrights as Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee, who wrote Inherit the Wind about the Scopes trial with William Jennings Bryan on one side and Clarence Darrow on the other. I had seen Inherit the Wind with Melvin Douglas playing it years ago, one of the most thrilling things I ever saw. They had also done Annie Mame, which is what Linda Bird cut her teeth on in the theater, the very first thing she saw, I believe. And then there was Henry Hughes, a critic of the Saturday Review and editor of the annual volume of Best Plays. Liz had made sure that some of the theater critics, like Mr. Cole, were on hand. Angie Duke actually presented the awards, adding luster to the occasion, I know. And the Canadian ambassador, Mr. Ritchie, was there for the occasion, and also the Secretary of State for Cultural Affairs, Lucius Battle. It was just exactly the sort of a theater group gathering that I would love to have been present at. And the way Linda glowed when she described it to me later made me realize that she has a taste for that sort of thing, too. It also made me wonder if batting around the world as a Navy wife on a very small salary might sometimes seem a little short of some of the interesting things that she will know here. I think Henry Hughes she must have found particularly attractive, and I noticed that in his book of best plays, which he had inscribed to the President and Mrs. Johnson, he had taken it back and added, with special thanks to Miss Linda Bird Johnson, who's a charmer. Deciding that the germs couldn't possibly go through the telephone wires, I picked up the phone and called in there to the Yellow Room and congratulated the three winners and found that Professor Savage works for Sam Seldon. So we talked about Emily and her playwriting ambitions. I also talked to Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee about Melvin Douglas and what a great performance we all thought he gave. Before the playwright activities were over, Lucy Baines came in and plopped down in a chair, and I said, how did everything go, honey? And she said, rather wistfully, Linda Bird just did fine. But that's not the way it looked to me the next day when I saw the picture of Lucy on tiptoe making a little speech on the stage, asking everybody to come in and have some punch and cookies. Now, does it sound like the little girl that I read about in the paper the next day, who had stayed on and talked to the high school students and to the national ballet performers after the performance was over and had been giving autographs and comparing notes on the life of a teenager and telling them that she liked the White House, but it was mighty big and it was kind of dark here now. All that she needs is a large dose of self-confidence, which I think for anybody as pretty and bright as she is must be just around the corner. Linda Bird and Wire Lynn came in bubbling with an arm full of autographed books, and I thought to myself, what a nice day this has been, and what a cross-section of exposure to young people and to, I hate to use the word, to culture, end quote. But it must not have been a good day for all the Johnson family, for Lyndon came in, and although he had what seemed to me a marvelous victory to rack up by reporting that the House had passed the Civil Rights Bill by a big majority, nevertheless, he was very much upset and very disturbed. I do not know quite what things had produced it.